Members, the hour of 3 o'clock having arrived, we are going to call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. Representative Petersburg, you are first on the list. Come on down. It's all right. We'll talk slow. Or maybe tomorrow. Representative Petersburg, we don't quite have a quorum yet, but we're going to get going. I will go ahead and move House File. That's right. I always do that. We can't technically move the bill until we have a quorum. But if you want to go ahead and start discussing House File 1243 and tell us why you like it and why we should pass it, and we'll get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I appreciate your willingness to hear this bill, which is a very good bill. It is one that has been worked in progress for about a year and a half, in which we are trying to deal with something that just recently got brought to the public's attention through Eyewitness 5 News, in which we're talking about being able to freeze the credit or lock the credit of minor children. According to statistics, that is the fastest growing identity theft is by minor children. After all, who would think about checking their children's credit history when they don't really have a credit? So basically what the bill does is it allows for the three primary reporting agencies or bureaus to be able to create a report and then freeze and lock the credit history so that nobody else can use it and generate it. What we're finding is that parents are, when they're going to bring their kids to college and they're starting to look at loans and grants, that their children's credit history has been destroyed previous years later. And with the advent of Mentor and some of the other programs, one particular parent found that they were disqualified for Mentor because their 9-year-old daughter was making $50,000 a year or some larger amount, which obviously she wasn't. So basically, this language has been worked on with the consumer data industry, who represents the three, and their language has been modified to adapt to Minnesota language. Everybody's in agreement, and we think it's a great proposal. And I had testifier here.
Are you looking for Mr. Ahern?
Is Mr. Appetz.
Appetz, I'm sorry.
He was going to be here, but no. He is in also agreement with
that's right.
Bill.
Members, any questions? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? We now have a quorum, so I will go ahead and move House File 1243 so it is properly before the committee. Seeing no member questions and nobody in the audience that wants to come up, Representative Petersburg will give you the final word.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say that this is a really good policy and that it really has no negative impact and is something really that we ought to do, and I hope it moves on to civil law.
Sounds good. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1243 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg and members.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tice. Representative Tice, welcome back to the committee. I will move House File 1119 so that it is before us. And the motion will be to re-refer this to civil law. Public safety. I knew that wasn't right. So House File 1119, re-referred to public safety. Representative Tice, welcome back to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there is an amendment that I would like to put on to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
I would assume that is the A170063 amendment.
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
I will move that amendment. Those in favor of the adoption of the author's amendment signify by saying aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Tice, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know how much you love brevity. So I
thank you, Representative Tice. Nice job on the bill.
Aye.
Aye. Representative Tice.
Well, then I won't even say anything. I'll just introduce Ms. Stone, and she will go through the quick sound bites.
Ms. Stone, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me before you again. Thank you, Representative Tice, for carrying this bill. What this bill does is it increases the penalty for unlicensed building contractors from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor. It puts us on par with our peers in the real estate industry, our realtor friends, our broker friends, our insurance provider friends, and our appraisers. We discovered this when we were working with the Department of Labor and Industry on how to best manage the unlicensed activity that's going on around the state. And one of the things that was identified is the fact that we have a penalty that is low enough that it does not often encourage city prosecutors to pick up the unlicensed activity as a crime.
Thank you, Ms. Stone. Members, any questions for the testifiers? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak on this bill, for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody. Representative Tice will give you the final word.
It's a good bill. Thank you for your support.
We like that. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1119, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Stone.
Thank you,
Representative Tice. Thank you, members. Representative Davids, you're up next.
Mr. Chair, I will move the minutes for March 1st.
Why, thank you, Representative Fenton. Members, any questions or comments on the minutes from our last meeting? Seeing none, those in favor of the Fenton motion to approve the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The minutes from our last meeting are adopted. Thank you, Representative Fenton. Representative Davids, to your bill. I assume you want to move House File 676.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 676.
Please proceed, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this has to do with pesticides and fertilizer application contracts. I would like Mr. Ahern to just briefly describe the bill, and we'll stand for any questions.
Mr. Ahern, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Ahern, and I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee. This bill is of limited application, but it's important to a very small section of the business climate in Minnesota, which deals with fertilizer and pesticide application. To understand what this bill does, you have to understand a little bit about the circumstances in which a very unique law that only applies to a fertilizer and pesticide licensed applicators came into being. Apparently in 1989 there was a raft of concerns with contracts being difficult to cancel and having onerous penalties that carried over from year to year. And the solution at that time was to require written contracts if there was going to be an application for over more than one application. And as a result, as time goes on, this requirement has led a company such as the one that I'm here on behalf of, True Green, which is the largest fertilizer and lawn care applicating company in the country, to basically badger their customers to get a written contract if they want more than one application. And if they don't get a written contract, they have to call them and visit them in person to see if they want the next application on a seasonal basis. So the solution, we think, to the problem, probably a better solution than that was created back in 1989, was to say that if the company allows the customer to cancel their contract any time, any way, in any manner, that should be sufficient and, frankly, more appropriately addresses the problem that this statute was meant to fix.
Thank you, Mr. Ahern. And I did note your use of the phrase limited application as applied to this bill. Well done. Members, any questions? Representative Halverson.
I'm not sure what it might be, but it seems that there should be some kind of a link to the fact that we're Representative Davis is bringing us a fertilizer bill. I'm
we'll, We'll let members of the audience use your own discretion on what you think that link might be.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson, good call. I think I'm slipping a little, but I didn't notice that. Representative O'Driscoll.
I'm almost positive there are no tax bills in the future for Representative Halverson.
That was a good one. Members, is there any questions? Not seeing any. Anyone in the audience that wants to testify on this bill? On either side, for or against? Not seeing anybody. Representative Davids will give you the final word.
We really appreciate your support, Mr. Chairman, members.
With that, Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 676 be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Ahern. Thank you, Representative Davids. Since you're up there, Representative Davids, why don't we jump right into House File 2096?
Okay. And Mr. Chairman and members, I will move House File 2096. And I have someone from the row right here. This bill has to do with the Minnesota Grocers Association, and I have a witness who would like to describe the bill.
Please introduce yourself for the record, young lady, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Hoppe, members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Jamie Poole, president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. House File 2096 is simply updating statute to match current business practices. The statute dates back to the 70s, and this was a time when businesses actually stickered the price on each item and required sometimes our customer to mark those with a grease pencil. That was actually innovative back in the early 70s. Today's market products are presented in a variety of ways. Points of the sale materials are always clearly displayed for customer ease and convenience. It's really just a simple update of statute. We thank Representative Davids and the members for their consideration. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Very good. Representative Halverson, any comments on this Davids bill? Members, any questions? Anybody else in the crowd that wants to speak to this bill? Seeing none, Representative Davids will give you the final word.
I appreciate your support, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 2096 be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Davids.
Thank you.
Representative Lunin. House File 817.
I'm sure I can find it.
Just Google it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 817.
All right. Thank you. And the motion would be that goes back to public safety.
And I want to thank you and the members for hearing this bill. And I'd like to get the amendment, 817 amendment, out of the way first.
Okay, sounds good. Representative Lunin offers the A17-0074 amendment. Those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A17 amendment is adopted.
Okay, here's what we just voted on. The that amendment, what we're going to do is make it, right now it's illegal to steal data out of an ATM machine with the use of a skimmer or a gas pump that people pay at the pump. And this bill is going to ultimately make it illegal to open the pump, which right now it is not. So it's basically going to be trespassing. This amendment gives an exemption to the Department of Commerce's Weights and Measures Division, who of course have to get in there. And then also the
thank you.
Who was the other one? Was the meter for the LPG liquid gas meter readers? Members, this amendment does a couple different things, but it forbids entry into the gas pump or attempting to go in. And the reason this is a problem is because of cameras, a gas station will see someone quickly opening the front of a pump because it's a pretty basic key. They catch them opening it. Well, they haven't broken any law yet, and so there's nothing they can do. Again, there's no recourse against them. And what this will do is will include actions of attempting to commit that crime.
So, Representative Lunin, we also have an A17-0181 amendment. Is that also an author's amendment? Is that the one you just described?
That's the one I just described.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm just checking because we did adopt the 74 amendment. So why don't you go ahead and move at this time the A17-0181 amendment that you just described.
This is the one that gives the exemption, Mr. Chairman, for the weights and measure people from the Commerce Department to come out and make sure that if you put 10 gallons of gas in your car, you're getting 10 gallons of gas. And for the LPG meter inspectors also to access the pump so that they can do their job efficiently.
Members, any questions on this amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the adoption of the A17-0181 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. We now have both of the amendments adopted. Representative Lunan, do you want to say anything to the bill as amended? Members, any questions for Representative Lunan? Is there anyone in the crowd that wants to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Lunan will give you the final word.
Well, until this bill is enacted, members, I would be careful about paying at the pump if the gas pump is further away from the gas station. This is a real problem. Actually, in my district, I was at a gas station. I saw a guy do a bad job of parking. Well, he was blocking the view of the gas station, and it looked like he was checking the air on his tires. And as quick as he could pop it open, he had the gas pump open, and I saw him put something in there and close it up, and it was like it was done. And that rattled me. I saw how easy this is to access these and put these skimmers in. And usually this goes on during the weekends. But if we pass this bill, we can get that problem solved.
With that, Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 817, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lunan. Thank you, members. Which one did you remember? Representative Smith, House File 1947. And Representative Smith, you have an amendment. Do you have two amendments? Are those both your author's amendments?
Okay. Mr. Chair, no. Only the A1 is the author's amendment.
Okay. So Representative Smith moves House File 1947. Would you also like to move the A1 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Members, those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Smith, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1947 is a simple bill that makes Minnesota consistent with the other 49 states in our country and how they regulate companies who provide third-party services to insurers in the management of auto glass claims. This legislation is necessitated because of an ongoing dispute between the Minnesota Department of Commerce and SafeLite. The department has suggested that SafeLite, and operating in Minnesota as an unlicensed insurance adjuster, SafeLite has objected to the department's decision and sought an appeal through the administrative law judge. On February 5th of 2016, the Honorable James LaFave, the administrative law judge assigned to the case, recommended a summary disposition agreeing with SafeLite's position. The administrative law judge, in his findings, agreed the services provided by SafeLite to their insurance clients were not claims adjusting. The ALJ, in his ruling, found that SafeLite does not engage in negotiating regarding claims and therefore could not be acting as an adjuster. The Department of Commerce has appealed the ALJ ruling. Members, as policy makers, we need to preserve the right to resolve these kinds of disputes. We created the current law, which provides exceptions to the regulation of Minnesota's insurance adjusters. The ALJ found the current exceptions, in fact, covered the activities of SafeLite. This legislation will take away any ambiguity and resolve this issue before it costs the state of Minnesota and others any additional legal fees and costs. Mr. Chair, I have a testifier that I'd like to have speak now.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Sir, please, or whoever's going next, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your comments.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee, my name is Scott Zeit, and I represent SafeLite Group. We are an organization that operates under the highest ethical standards in the United States and as well as Minnesota. And we seek to be the leading advocate for consumers across the country on measures related to vehicle glass repair and replacements in the area of choice, quality, safety, and anti-fraud measures. We operate three distinct companies across the country in all 50 states. We have Service Auto Glass, which is a wholesale division of our organization, Safelite Auto Glass, which most of you probably know the jingle, Safelite Repair, Safelite Replace, and we also operate Safelite Solutions, which is a claims management organization. The claims management organization has multiple practices, one of which runs glass programs for automobile insurers. We also take first notice of loss calls for other lines of insurance. The glass programs are seamless. The insurance companies create the program. Calls come in to insurers, or they come into our contact center. We notify individuals through that process. They're working directly with Safelite Solutions on behalf of their insurer. We also inform them that they have a right to take their vehicle, be repaired at any facility of their choice. If they have a facility of choice, the claim is assigned or the job is assigned to the glass shop, and we process an invoice, and then we're the conduit of the payment. If the consumer does not have a choice, insurance companies have the authority to recommend, and in many cases they do. Safelite Auto Glass serves as their primary primary provider of choice. There's no secret, as you've heard, that we've had our challenges with the Commerce Department. This started 2 years ago in an order where one of our insurance clients was given a cease and desist and asked not to work with Safelite. That we challenged that to the federal court, and we received a summary judgment in our favor, and I think that the judge's order said that it was a baseless investigation. During that process, the Commerce Department also issued an order against Safelite indicating that we were acting as an adjuster, and that's why we are here today. As you heard, it went to administrative law judge. We received a summary judgment. It went back to Commerce Department, and they disagree. So we're in a conundrum. How do we resolve this so that we're consistent with 50 or 49 other states? So we have two options. We can continue our legal challenges similar to the other challenge and unfortunately drive up costs within the state, which doesn't help anybody, doesn't help consumers, doesn't help us, and will potentially resolve the issue. Or we're here to seek legislative solutions so that, again, Minnesota operates consistently with 49 other states. There's a few items I would just like to point out. Safelite Solutions is not the only claim management organization supporting insurers in the state of Minnesota. However, Safelite is the only company that's been investigated. Number two, 90% of all glass shops in the state of Minnesota accept the insurer's fair and reasonable rate, or they bill below. So we're dealing with a small set of glass shops which the Commerce Department is defending with their order against us. And finally, I just want to emphasize, that in 2002, the Commerce Department requested from Safelite Solutions and received data where they could analyze how we operate in the state of Minnesota, and there was no finding that we were operating unethically or outside the scope of the law, and most importantly, as an adjuster. So the investigation was done over 10 years ago, but our program has not changed one bit since that investigation. So we ask your support for this bill so that Minnesota operates consistent with others around the country, and that it identifies that what we do and what others do as claim management companies is not considered adjusting. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Representative Lunan had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'm not comfortable with this bill. I'm not going to vote for it. What we're doing here is as a relationship to another problem we as legislators are going to have to deal with in healthcare with network inadequacy. And this is going to codify and start bringing into property and casualty losses a network environment where there will be a containment and there will be vendors that are winners and losers. And I'm very concerned about that. And that if we do go down that road, everything we do, we are doing on purpose. And I've talked to all the parties involved, and they know, you know, where I'm at on this. And there's some real problems. You know, I'd like to work with Representative Smith to see if there's some improvements we can do on the bill to make it workable, but the bill as it is right now is not what we should be doing.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Mr. Hill, did you want to speak to the bill?
I don't need to.
Members, other questions? Then Mr. Rick Roser. Mr. Roser, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Whenever you're ready, if you could say your name, state your name. I can't even speak today. For the tape, and then proceed with your comments.
Sure. My name is Rick Roser. I'm with Rapid Glass. I'm here to speak in opposition to the bill. It's interesting sitting in the gallery with some of the other folks in the auto glass industry up there, hearing some of the other things here go on about they want to improve licensing so to protect consumers. And here we're talking about stripping away consumer protection to minimize the licensing required. First of all, I would like to say that SafeLight absolutely acts like a claim adjuster in every form, every fashion of the way. Some of the things that they do is they take first notice of loss, which things that insurance adjusters do. In fact, their 800 number is on most insurance cards. You could probably pull out your insurance card, and it'll have an 800 number, and that goes directly to SafeLight. Many customers believe that that's their insurance company. It is not. That's SafeLight's phone number that's on there. They answer the phone, XYZ Insurance Company Claim Service. Again, right away the consumer thinks they're talking to the insurance company. They are not. They collect and have vast amounts of personal and consumer data. While we're on the phone with them, they already have some data provided from the insurance company, and they go through a litany of questions to the consumer, getting additional data, email addresses, where they work, where they park, phone numbers, and much more personal information. And this information needs to be protected. They determine the severity of the damage and whether it should be a repair or replacement. Again, something that insurance adjusters do. They determine, is it bad enough for the windshield to be replaced, or does it need to be a chip repair? And if it's a chip repair, how many chip repairs? SafeLight determines that. They approve or deny what additional parts or labor is needed on the job. Again, something that an insurance adjuster does. They investigate customers. They perform telephone inspections and decide whether or not there is a claim on the job at all. They make the pricing decisions. They confirm or deny to the customer, the insurance customer, if there's coverage, and they determine if there's a deductible or not, and they convey that deductible information to the consumer. If there is a deductible, they determine if the dollar amount of the damage is above or below the deductible to whether they should file claim or just pay out of pocket. They convey warranty information to the consumer, and they sell it as the insurance company's warranty program. They say you may or may not be covered under Allstate's warranty program, when in essence this is really the warranty is offered by the glass shop themselves. They tell auto glass shops to call or email for pricing approval. They email us that every day. If we have extra things we need to talk about, we don't contact the insurance company, we contact SafeLight to get additional pricing or labor approval on certain parts. They give recommendations to consumers on what shops to use. They tell customers to call them if they need to change any information. We always tell the customers, they're our customers, call us if you need anything. But while we're on the phone with them during this claims process, they tell the customers to call them. They inform the customer if they have to pay out of pocket or not. If the shop charges more than a certain dollar amount that the insurance company will pay, they inform the customer they may have to pay out of pocket. As a glass shop, we send our bills to SafeLight. We don't send them to the insurance company. We send them to SafeLight. And on the opposite side of that, we receive our payments from SafeLight. We get the bills. It says Safe Flight Autoglass on the bill. Safe Flight. Safe Flight, like I say, is basically acting like an adjuster. There really is no difference. I believe they know they're acting like a claims adjuster. Otherwise, why would they want to change the law? If they weren't acting like a claims adjuster, there should be no reason for it. Basically, why would we want to allow SafeRight to operate without oversight for a law that was put in place to protect the consumer? Because that's what it is. Those laws were put in place to protect the consumer. We're removing those rights, allowing SafeRight to say or do whatever they want without oversight. And if they are not adjusting claims, then why should they have anything to worry about with the present language? If they're not adjusting claims, goes through the administrative hearing, maybe goes to court, they got nothing to worry about. And I just want to touch on a couple things that they had commented on up here. I wrote a couple notes. They said that the Commerce Department said that the insurance company could not work with SafeLight. That is nothing farther from the truth. It was an agreement between Commerce and the insurance company that the insurance company would not work with SafeLight. Commerce did not force them, did not tell them. This was a signed agreement on both sides with no prejudice whatsoever. Regarding the 49 state issue, again, I have seen no evidence in that. I will also say I myself have toured SafeLight's facility in Columbus, Ohio, and I know for a fact I have seen insurance adjusting licenses posted up on the wall there, and SafeLight representatives have explained to me that that's what they were. And then also regarding the ALJ, it's a great process. You know, it's something we have to go through, but the ALJ is an administrative judge. He is, you know, actually beneath the Commerce Commissioner. When push comes to shove, it's a recommendation of the Commerce Commissioner. It's the Commerce Commissioner where the buck stops. And the consumers in Minnesota need to have the protection and need to have the oversight from anybody that's working with claims in the insurance field. Thank you. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr.
Any
Rosar.
Any questions?
Members, any questions for Mr. Rosar? Representative Davids.
Thank you. And Mr. Rosar, do you ever take, as a body shop operator, do you ever take a first notice of loss?
No. Mr. Rosar. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rosar, so I bust a windshield, I go to my local body shop, I tell them I need something fixed. Isn't that a first notice of loss?
Mr. Rosar.
We do not file the claim. I mean, we take the information. The customer comes to us as a contractor to do the work. But the first notice of loss, I believe, is what you would consider what's filed with the insurance company. And SafeLight, I think they will tell you that they take the first notice of loss.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rosar, I'm a licensed insurance agent. I get calls all the time with the first notice of loss. Does that make me an adjuster?
Mr. Rosar.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Okay.
Representative.
You said in your testimony previously that because SafeLight takes first notices of loss that they're an adjuster. I'm a licensed insurance agent. I take first notice of loss like every day. Does that make me an adjuster?
Mr. Rosar.
I wouldn't understand the total language of that, but I guess I would feel more comfortable as a consumer that you were licensed to take that information.
Mr.
Well,
Representative Davis.
I don't have an adjuster license, and I'm not going to get one. This Commerce Committee will never pass it where an insurance agent has to be an adjuster. You made the statement
Correct. That
SafeLight Autoglass takes first notices of loss, therefore they're an adjuster. That's not true.
Well, I believe it is one of the things that adjusters may do. I mean, I've given you a list of various things. That's one of the items.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rosar,
Representative.
Agents take first notices of loss. Insurance companies take first notices of loss. Just because somebody takes a first notice of loss does not mean they're an adjuster. And you said because SafeLight is taking first notice of loss, which they have the right to do, that does not make them an adjuster.
Mr. Davids, I think I would say if somebody's taking first notice of loss in that context, like an agent or an insurance company is, they should be licensed.
As what, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Davids.
Either as an insurance adjuster or an agent. I mean, they need to be licensed, just like agents are licensed for the reason to protect the consumers because they handle this vital information. Anybody that takes that kind of vital information should be licensed.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Roser, I take first notice of loss. I'm a licensed insurance agent. Do I need an adjuster's license?
Mr. Roser.
That would be up to the Commerce Commissioner to decide.
Well, he's already decided, Mr. Chairman. He's already decided. We're not adjusters. We don't need an adjuster's license. And we take first notice of the loss. So your comments about Safelite needing to have an adjuster's license because they take a first notice of loss over the phone, that's not current law. And as long as I'm around here, it'll never become law. I said, over my dead body, and somebody said, that could be arranged. So I was a little concerned about that, Mr. Chairman. But so I think you're kind of, I would respectfully say, you're not getting it quite right here. Because you take first notice of loss does not mean you are an adjuster. Then you turn it over to an adjuster, and you get out of the way, and you let them do their thing. That's the way it works in my agency, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis, I think this would be a good time to come to our next testifier. Mr. Roser, nice job testifying.
Thank you.
Colonel Wolfgram. Colonel, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members. My name is Lee Wolfgram. I'm going to give you a little perspective as a consumer. I have, over the years, filed many, many claims, and I've expressed my frustration, particularly with Safelite, because I don't even talk to my insurance company anymore. My insurance company is USAA. If I call them and I have the standard class waiver, if I call USAA and I call them, there's a menu I go through. And if it's a class claim, it automatically goes to Safelite. I never talk to an adjuster. I never have the ability to talk to my insurance company. I'm asked information from Safelite, which my insurance company already has, so it's clearly evident to me that that they are acting as a contractor for the insurance company, but they don't have all the information on my policy. They're asking me all these questions. And so when it comes to this question I'm hearing today is about adjusting, I don't have an adjuster. I just have Safelite. And I'm very sensitive to this because I've been steered by my insurance company to do things that have hurt me in the past. For example, this is a little out of context, but taking aftermarket replacement parts for my vehicle instead of the manufacturer's part. And I see this as being a very similar end game here. When I call for a glass claim, I'm automatically sent to Safelite. Safelite asks me information my insurance company already has. They tell me that I can have the work done anywhere I want to have it. However, there is a limit to the amount that Safelite will pay, and at that point in time, I feel like I'm almost compelled to go with them because I'm the consumer. I don't know this stuff. And that's the reason why I felt compelled, because this has been, over the years, it gets worse and worse and worse, and I don't have an adjuster anymore when I call my insurance company. I have Safelite. There's not even a way for me to get out of that loop unless I hang up the phone with Safelite, make a special call back to the insurance company, and try to talk to somebody there, and I get referred right back to Safelite. So I just want this committee to know that there is definitely an effort to keep the business within Safelite and to squeeze anybody else out, and that's what's going on when you call your insurance company. So,
Colonel Wolfgram, thank you.
Thank you.
Nice job testifying. Members, any questions? Not seen any. Thank you, sir. Thanks. Anybody else that wants to speak for or against this bill? Commissioner Rothman? As always, welcome to the committee. In this case, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
As Minnesota's insurance regulator, you all know, I'd like to share a few thoughts about this piece of legislation, which creates an exemption for Minnesota's insured adjuster statute for Safelite. Bottom line, I'll explain why the department strongly opposes this legislation. If passed, it would have a significant and negative impact on consumers and small businesses, as you've already heard by prior testifiers. The proposed changes create an additional exemption, as stated in the legislation, and these changes clearly would circumvent the intent of Minnesota's adjuster law. The intent of the statute is crystal clear. It's actually in the statute, so I'll just quote it. The purpose is, quote, to provide high-quality service to insureds and the insurance claimants in the state of Minnesota by providing for well-trained adjusters and persons engaged in soliciting business for adjusters who are qualified to deal with the public in the interests of a fair resolution of insurance claims. I would just note again that it states specifically that the purpose is to provide high-quality service to insureds and insurance claimants with the goal of a fair resolution of insurance claims. In other words, the statute is designed to protect Minnesota consumers and to protect their interest in the claims process. It is really not intended to serve the insurance companies, nor is it intended to protect their interests relative to consumers. It provides a licensing requirement. It also requires, some certain conduct. And there's good reasons for the distinction. They boil down to the fact that in the claims process, the insurance company has the advantage. We've all had insurance claims. They have an advantage of more information and expertise, and therefore inherent power than the individual consumer does. The economists call it an asymmetric relationship, which by its very nature, one side is at a greater risk of being treated unfairly. That's why we have the state license adjusters law, and that's why it requires training neutral individuals who can provide consumers with the necessary information to protect their interests in a fair manner. The law also clearly states that adjusters are expected to act on behalf of the insured, not to represent the interests of the insurance company. So there are things, and we've had issues with this from time to time, not particularly this company, but or solely this company, but we often get into a situation, which you've heard testimony about, steering consumers to specific repair shops that have signed on to serve the financial interests of insurance companies. Those are interests that we need to protect from. In effect, the proposed changes in the legislation would place a little bit of a finger on the scale to the benefit of insurance companies and remove these vital protections for consumers. Moreover, as you've heard, the proposed changes would disadvantage Minnesota's locally owned small businesses. For large auto glass companies with affiliates that both provide glass repair service and handle automobile glass claims for insurance companies, the legislation would, by the exemption, provide a clear path for them to dominate the market. It's a prescription for monopoly, driving local companies out of the business. It defies fairness, and for that reason, we believe it's not in the interests of consumers. And in particular, as you've heard, in this instance, when a company acts for the entire life cycle, from the beginning of the notice of the claim through the negotiation process and through the billing cycle and the payment cycle, they're basically and essentially handling a claim for the initial consumer call to the disbursing of the payment and also advising the consumer on their insurance and repairs and all of that. That is claims adjusting. As part of that entire life cycle of services, the company is clearly engaged in claims adjusting, pure and simple. You know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it is a duck and should be treated as the same as all other ducks. A company that performs these adjusting services should be bound by the same consumer protections and responsibilities that apply to all adjusters. It makes no sense why we should have an exemption for one, especially when it would disadvantage Minnesota consumers. So that's why I urge you to... We have serious concerns and not to pass the legislation. So thank you, and stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Davis has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Rothman. To the comment by a previous witness, if a license, okay, I'm sitting in my office in Preston watching Fox News because it's fair and balanced, and I get a phone call, and I take the phone call, and they say I have a damaged windshield. What should I do? I take the first notice of loss as the agent. Do I need an adjuster's license?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, there's a specific exemption in the statute for you as an insurance agent.
I think I wrote that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. So, so because basically it spells out who shall be licensed agents, and there are specific exemptions, including attorneys at law. There's a whole list of them, and number 12 is a licensed insurance producer or an attorney, in fact. Somebody basically is acting on behalf of the agent.
Representative Davids.
Thank you.
Members, other questions? Not seeing any other questions.
I have some comments if we're at the end of the hearing.
I think we're almost at the end. Is there anybody else that wants to speak for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think it's important to know the facts about the Department of Commerce's investigation of Safelite and companies with whom Safelite does business. So if you have not already done so, I strongly encourage you to read the memorandum order and opinion issued by U.S. District Court Judge Susan Nelson. It came out on January 23rd, 2011. And that opinion makes clear that it wasn't Safelite who was in the wrong. And these are just a few of the quotes from Judge Nelson. On page 6, referring to two Minnesota auto glass shops, quote, unquote, end quote, the Minnesota shops believe Safelite is responsible for driving down the price of auto glass repair and replacement in Minnesota. On page 7, quote, end quote, however, and important to this matter, there is no evidence the DOC ever received any complaint for consumer slash insured regarding Safelite's claims administration practices. On pages 11 and 12, a department investigator listened to at least 100 calls between Safelite, insureds, and at times representatives of non-network shops. And in this case, the DOC produced transcripts for 6 of the calls that it reviewed. And during 4 of the 6 calls produced, Safelite stated that an insured, quote-unquote, may or might be balanced billed. However, on only 1 of the 6 calls did Safelite exclusively declare that an insured would be balanced billed. So, of 100 calls reviewed, the department found only 1 call that could be remotely construed as steering. Even on that call, the call center employee said that the insured would be balance billed only if the non-network shop exceeded the insurer's maximum price for the glass repair. And on page 13, referring to 2 Minnesota auto glass shops, they expressed their hope that the investigation would benefit non-network shops financially, as they have provided a lot of information to help with the investigation. The commerce investigator would periodically give the Minnesota shops updates on the investigation and even shared confidential information about the status and likely outcome. Sharing confidential information in this way with competitors was contrary to the DOC's policies and procedures. On page 26, the DOC's position that Safelite cannot tell insureds that they may be balanced billed amounts to a prohibition on commercial speech. So informing insureds of the potential for balanced billing is in the best interest of consumers. And finally, on page 36, the DOC produced no empirical evidence of consumer deception or confusion related to Safelite's may be balanced billed statements. In fact, it received no consumer complaints at all about Safelite's claims administration services. This lack of evidence, combined with the Minnesota shop's aggressive lobbying, which was plainly motivated by their desire to eliminate Safelite as economic competition, calls into question the DOC's purported interest in consumer deception. Those are the findings and quotes of Judge Nelson, and I urge you to read the opinion in its entirety.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. And members, I apologize. But I thought we were at the end, and I had it right in front of me, and I forgot Representative Davids has an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A17-0147 amendment, and I have Tracy Dolan would like to make some comments on this.
Mr. Dolan, please take a seat.
Thank you.
Start when you're identify yourself with the tape and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tracy Dolan. I am a licensed contractor in the state of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm here to talk about the license requirements for independent adjusters in regards to property and claims. And what this amendment does is it talks about independent adjusters, especially when they're coming from out of state, is being conversant with Minnesota building codes. I, as a contractor, especially when we're in a catastrophe situation like what happened yesterday, there will be a lot of out-of-state contract or out-of-state independent adjusters that come in that are not well-versed with what the requirements are for our state and what we need to do.
That's, thank you. Is that
right? Well, we run into a problem quite a bit. Just because we have ice and water shield, we have different building codes, everything else. So what this amendment would do would to make that if I was a contractor coming in from another state, I would have to be conversant with Minnesota code. All we ask is that the independent adjusters are as well.
Sounds good. Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, and I thank Ms. Dolan for her testimony. This is an issue that I just wanted to bring to the committee's attention. I don't think it necessarily fits on this bill so much, Representative Smith, but I thank Ms. Dolan for her testimony, and this is a problem with out-of-state adjusters coming in, but at this time, members, I withdraw the 0147 amendment.
Representative Davids withdraws the 0147 amendment. Anybody else that wants to speak to the bill? Members, any questions for the author? Seeing none, Representative Smith will give you the final word.
Mr. Chair, members, I ask for your support.
With that, Representative Smith renews his motion that House File 1947, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion does prevail. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Smith. House file. Okay. Division having been called. Those in favor of House File 1947 as amended, signify, raise your hands. The clerk will note the roll for the division. Those opposed, raise your hands. He was a no, so it should be 10 to 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. By a vote of 10 to 8, the chair's hearing was impeccable. The bill does pass. Thank you, members. House File 1558 is the next bill in front of us, and I'm speaking very slowly now because Representative Kreshaw, the author of this bill, is presenting a bill in a lesser another committee right now. So members, I think what we're going to do is not leave the room, but we're going to take a short, hopefully 5 to 10 minute recess while we try to find Representative Kreshaw. So for just a few minutes, we will be in recess. I can present it. Kelly, do you want to be the...
Yep. Members, we're going to have Chair Hoppe start by presenting House File 1558 for Representative Kreshaw.
Representative Hillstrom, Madam Chair. Thank you for your idea. This is Representative Kreshaw's bill, but I will go ahead and start presenting it. He is more than willing to come back as quickly as he can and jump in. I'm not an expert on this bill, but I will move House File 1558 so it's before the committee. I don't think we have an amendment. I know that we have a number of people that want to come up and testify for and against the bill. Why don't we, Madam Chair, if it's okay with you and committee members, why don't we jump right into that and have our first testifier come down?
And Mr. Chair, you're going to move it to go to Education Finance?
I believe that's the destination.
That's correct. Okay. So with that is Mr. Earl Altman, and I have Mr. Earl Altman followed by Ms. Grace Kelleher, if you want to just get in queue for that. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Earl Ottman. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I have almost 38 years of experience working in school finance and have been heavily involved with health insurance issues at the local and regional levels for about 27 years. Maswell has three proposed changes to the to current law. First one is eliminate the two-year bid requirement. Previously, districts were allowed to go out for bid every year, or at least every 4 years, if with a service cooperative, 5 years if they were fully insured. Under current law, fully insured districts and self-insured districts through a service co-op must go out every 2 years. This has increased administrative costs at all levels with little to show for it. Health insurance providers, including PEEP, service cooperatives, and district administrative staff, all have additional costs because of this requirement. Higher administrative costs result only in higher premiums. Under the previous law, districts were allowed to go out for bid every year if they chose to do so. Again, current law does not allow for this level of flexibility. Also under HEDA law, districts must get at least three bids, and one of them must be from PEEP. By doing so, PEEP is not allowed to evaluate what groups may fit into their book of business like other service providers are allowed to do. Higher administrative costs are again the result. When bidding, PEEP only bids their own distinct benefit packages, which do not meet most districts' bid specifications. Districts and or service cooperatives must then hire actuarial firms or expend a great deal of staff time to determine which bid is lower based on the benefit package that was bid. This again results in higher administrative costs. Maswell proposes that districts, management and employees, let me start over. Maswell proposes that the requirement to obtain bids every 2 years be eliminated, thus allowing individual districts, management, and employees the flexibility to decide to go out for bid every year or, at the very least, every 4 years if with a service co-op, or 5 years if fully insured, referring back to the previous law. Also, the requirement that PEEP must provide a bid to every district should be eliminated. They should be allowed to manage their own book of business and not be forced to provide bids to every district. Number two, proposal. Implement equal bid requirements. Currently, interpretation of the HIDA law is that if a district is in the PEEP program, that district can ignore the two-year bid requirement. This provides the PEEP program a significant administrative advantage over health insurance providers and service cooperatives. Maswell proposes that all districts enrolled in the PEEP program should be required to go out for bid every 2 years as well, if that stipulation were to stay in place. Number three, return the decision authority to leave current insurance carrier to school district, to school boards. They are, after all, the ones paying for the benefit. Shouldn't they have some say in who their provider is? Under current Minnesota law, excludes the representatives of the largest bargaining unit. In most cases, this is the teachers' union. Can get a proposal from PEEP and leave their current carrier or and or service provider regardless if the proposal is more expensive or offers less coverage for districts' insured members. When this happens, many times it is only the teachers' union membership that leaves. Such were the cases in Edina, Osseo, Wadena, and Crosby Ironton, just to name a few. This results in districts having two carriers and more administrative expense. This can and does cause much confusion and may at times animosity between district personnel. I will cite two examples. 2 years ago, the Malacca District received their NJPA service co-op renewal. The teachers decided that they would leave the NJPA Service Cooperative and go to PEAK. The remaining staff, the cooks, the paraprofessionals, the custodians, the secretarial and administrative staffs, did not want to go along with their fellow teachers to PEAK. That remaining group asked the NJPA Service Cooperative if they could stay. Before answering that question, NJPA Service Cooperative had to re-rate the remaining members of that pool. It was determined that the remaining group was a high-risk group and decided not to insure them. This forced the remaining members to go to PEAK, even though they did not want to, and had no say in the decision to go to PEAK. One can speculate that they were all not happy about this. The second example is the Crosby-Ironton School District. This past summer, after going through the entire HITA process with the NJPA Service Cooperative, it was actuarially determined that the lowest and best bid was to stay with the current carrier. Crosby was given a slight decrease in their insurance rates with no change in benefits. A little while later, the Crosby's union leadership met and, to make a long story short, decided to go to PEAK without consulting administration whatsoever. The rationale for leaving wasn't less premium or better benefits, but being part of a 20,000-member pool and rate stability. By doing so, Crosby's teaching staff lost their negotiated benefit package and the ability to negotiate benefit changes as long as they stay with PEAK. Again, the remaining staff did not want to go with PEAK. Again, NJPA re-rated them. The result was a 14% decrease for the remaining members of that pool. It seems that the teachers were at the high-risk group this time. The remaining staff, needless to say, are very happy that the teachers went to PEAK. Whether or not the teaching staff are happy with their new plan is unknown, as they have been quiet on the subject, according to their business manager. Because of these concerns with the current laws, Maswell proposes that the ability of the exclusive representative to leave their current carrier should be rescinded, and the final authority for these decisions should be returned to the school boards. Maswell believes these changes will reduce administrative costs, reduce premiums, provide a more equal playing field during the bidding process, and hopefully happier employees.
Thank you, Mr. Offman. Members, are there any questions for the testifier? Okay. Seeing none, we have the next person in line is Ms. Grace Kelleher. And I don't see her here. Mr. Tom Pearson. Following Mr. Tom Pearson will be Mr. Bill Zwack. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Pearson, and I'm a teacher in the Duluth School District, ISD 709. Just a little experience on Duluth. I serve on our insurance committee, and in 2010, our insurance committee is made up of teachers and members of our administration, our business service manager, so forth and so on. And in 2010, our renewal rates for health partners were due. I don't remember the month, but the renewal rates came in at over 15%. And we sat down at the table with health partners, and health partners knew that, again, this is 2010 before HITA, they knew that the peak bids were coming due, and we were going to entertain a bid from PEAK the following week. The health partners' representatives told us they'd like the opportunity to sharpen their pencils and come meet with us within a few days, roughly a week. They came back to our insurance committee, and lo and behold, their insurance premiums or renewal rate for us went from about 15.8 down to 6%, the rate of PEAK's increase for the following year. At that point, our labor management committee, our insurance committee, decided we were going to go with PEAK. We have been with them now for six or seven renewals, and our renewal rate since 2010 is a total of 0.9% over that period of time. saving our school district millions of dollars with that program. And I will say that there was an adjustment period going from Health Partners at the time to a different plan, which is PEEP. But I will tell you, I serve on the committee, and I have not had one phone call in 6 years being concerned about the health insurance that we have with PEEP. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Pearson? Seeing none, Mr. Zwak, welcome to the committee, and please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Zwak, and I am a science teacher at East High School in Duluth. In 2010, our district became a member of the PEEP plan. In the first year, we experienced a minus 8 premium reduction. That was followed by a minus 5 reduction. And since then, for 7 years in total, we averaged a 0.9% increase. Historically, Health Partners, the plan we had prior to 2010, had a medical inflation rate of 15%. This percentage comes from the 10 years prior to 2010. As a result, comparatively, our district has realized a savings of over $110 million. As a classroom teacher who struggles with budget issues and rising class sizes, I'm appreciative of these savings. And I believe that the competitive bid process that included PEEP got us this savings. And that savings has allowed me to better serve my students and my school district. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Zwak? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Next is Mr. Don Sinner, and following that is Ms. Laura Messler. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Don Sinner. I'm the president in Lakeville and have been on our insurance committee for 15 years. The page is handing out a sheet with some numbers. I won't focus on numbers quite so much, but the Lakeville story is about how HIDA actually works for us. We are a large district with 3,000 insured lives. We now get bids from all five participants, including PEEP, Medica, Preferred One, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Health Partners. We actually force the Blues, and on my sheet it shows in the 3 years preceding, we went up 40% in our health insurance premiums and a 23% increase out of pocket for my members on what we were paying for health insurance. When we went to this system of bidding, since then, in two year rounds of bargaining, we are now at a 3.4% decrease from the premiums we were at 2012. And a 69% decrease in the amount of money my members are taking out of pocket now to their paychecks to pay for their health insurance. We have the exact same health insurance program that we had in 2008. This bill, when I went to the insurance committee, myself, the ESP unit in my local, and the custodial unit, which is SEIU in my local, all went together and requested a PEEP bid together. It was because of that leverage from the initial bids to the secondary bids that in the first round it went down from 4.9% decrease in the bidding process to 8.9% between initial to final. In the last round when we did this, our first year decrease was 12.5%. That is how we are paying less for insurance today with the same insurance coverage than we were before. What did that mean in our contract? We were able to save over $1.2 million in our last contract, which we put to our teacher development and evaluation program and QComp program, and allowed us to defer a local levy on our taxpayers for 2 years. We saved our taxpayers in our district $1.2 million over 2 years. And because we did not have to increase spending out of the general fund for our insurance, that allowed us to spend more dollars that would normally go into a contract negotiation on health insurance on programs for our students and their opportunities. So HIDA works very, very well for us. And the leverage that we have by being able to get bids from everyone in our local has worked for us and worked very well for taxpayers in Lakeville.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Center? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I appreciate your testimony, but as I read through this bill, can you point out where you would be prohibited from still doing PEEP bids if you so chose to do that? Is there language in this bill that says you would be banned from doing a PEEP bid?
It wouldn't stop
Mr.
us.
Mr. Center.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative. I don't know if this would prohibit us from getting a PEEP bid or not, but that leverage is always there. If you take away our leverage to go to another program, then that bid can be ignored by a district.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Center. Just to kind of allay your fears, there is nothing in this bill that prohibits you from seeking a PEEP bid at any time that you wanted to. Instead, what it does, it allows other entities that maybe don't want to go that route flexibility not to do a PEEP bid. So you still retain that option to seek a PEEP bid. So hopefully that gives you some solace. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I really appreciate hearing from all the testifiers at this point and that they are very fortunate because they do have access under a group plan to be able to get insurance, where we have been working in this committee and in this legislative session to try to preserve an individual insurance market where those options are evaporating faster than we can think of and care to think about. And what I'm hearing is you like the opportunity to have options. And I want to thank Chair Hoppe and the legislature for carrying House File 1, which actually expanded the amount of options that are available by allowing private carriers to be able to enter the individual insurance market, the health insurance market, which should give you even more opportunities other than just what was available under HIDA. So repealing these items that we're talking about today actually doesn't affect you in a negative way from what I can see. Through the work of the legislature so far this year and with what you have available in the group market, you're going to have the potential for all kinds of plans to look at and potentially get some additional savings. Not a question, more just a comment of where we're at in Minnesota, kind of a state of the state address with insurance.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And then we have one final testifier, Ms. Laura Messler. Please welcome to the committee and please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chairman and committee members, thank you. Laura Messler, I am a middle school veteran language arts teacher in Edina. I joined the insurance committee a number of years ago because of the chaos that was going on with health insurance. So PEEP and HIDA, as they stand currently, greatly improve health care for teachers. Prior to PEEP and HIDA, chaos of changing insurance providers every other year added stress, work and confusion, taking away from focus on our work. We experienced a roller coaster of rates, low, high, low, high. The initial bid was usually reasonable. Then the additional year came with no guarantee and was always exponentially a higher premium, double-digit increases. Additionally, we experienced plan instability. Given the roller coaster nature of our rates, there were often significant plan changes going from co-pays to high deductible plans to offset the rate hikes, excuse me. This ultimately diminished coverage for members. With the constant change in plans and networks to find affordable rates, there was a lack of continuity of care for many members as they had to change providers, often creating havoc in people's lives as they tried to manage their care in affordable ways, yet having to change providers. What PEEP and HIDA offer for teachers as they stand without changes is overall better rates, stability in rates. We do have a choice of network. We have the ease of not having to switch providers. We have the ease that we don't need referrals within a provider's network. All this without stress and chaos every couple of years switching to whichever provider had the best guaranteed sign-up rate, but not having to worry about rate increases. So my question would be to you, as you look at this, who is benefiting from the proposed changes of HIDA? The right teachers have to go into PEEP is our only voice that we have in decisions about our health care. I would ask that you please don't take that option away from teachers. We would like to have our voice still.
Thank you, Ms. Messler. And I have one member question. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And to the first testifier, you had indicated that you saw a rate reduction. With those other carriers, I believe their loss ratio, because statewide it happened, reduced as well. Do you know what their reductions were relative to what PEEPs were?
Let me ask a clarifying question to make sure I understand your question. You're asking what the rate decreases would have been for PEEP as compared to the other bids we received?
Well, you had...
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had testified that you saw premium relief or rate reduction mm-hmm. with your PEEP product, which is great to hear. It's my understanding that that same relief happened in almost all the carriers in the school market.
Mr. Center.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. We've never been in PEEP. We are not a PEEP district. We have always been fully insured, and we have bounced back and forth between Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and health partners. It is that PEEP bid that puts pressure on another program as it comes in, because it is apples and oranges a little bit by what the PEEP 3 plans are, which are defined, versus what our program of insurance has always been. So it does help us analyze what our program is and what benefit package would be versus a price, and our members always vote in Lakeville on where we go. But that pressure helps us drive the cost down.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you. The purpose of PEEP is to make sure that it's a safety net, an insurance safety net for school districts that would have a hard time or maybe an impossible time getting someone to bid on their health care product. That's really what the function of it is supposed to be. It helping you get a lower bid, I would imagine it could only do that by being the lowest bid, so I don't quite understand that statement. But that's what PEEP's role is, and it's important that we keep PEEP around, because there are districts that have a hard time getting carriers to bid on them. So no one here is saying that it's bad. It's just relieving some of these smaller districts of the burden of requiring a bid from them.
Representative Rosenthal.
Madam Chair, can I?
I'm sorry, Representative Crescia.
Thank you. And just a clarifying question to the testifier. So you're self-insured?
No.
Mr. Center.
Madam Chair, Representative Crescia, we are a fully insured district. We are not self-insured, and we are not in PEEP.
Okay.
Representative Crescia. Thank you. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the language arts teacher from Edina. First of all, where do you teach?
Valley View Middle School.
Okay, so you haven't had the pleasure.
Representative Rosenthal.
Madam Chair, you haven't had the pleasure of seeing my two sons.
Yes. Ms. Messler.
Can you tell me, over the last couple of negotiations for health care, how it's played out and why you've come to the conclusion you've come to?
Ms. Messler.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Thank you for that excellent question. Yes. So prior to HIDA and prior to PEEP, our rates would be the first year when they won our business would be here. The second year they would not tell us, would not guarantee, was double digits. Since HIDA and PEEP, we have had the right to, as a teacher's bargaining union, choose the health insurance that best fits our needs. And with PEEP, we've seen over the last at least 6 years, and it might be eight, I'm not positive, but the last several rounds of negotiations, our rates have been like this, just almost straight across.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Crescia, could you explain to me, the largest part of my district is self-insured. Mm-hmm. Would this bill do anything to Bloomington?
Representative Crescia.
No, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Rosenthal. The interesting thing is self-insured districts are exempt. They don't believe this should apply to them. And in fact, we had an amendment on the House floor last year where all the self-insured districts voted against being included in the HIDA language. And then when that was defeated, then we came back with the HIDA that all the self-insured members voted against my bill. So it's interesting that the self-insured districts don't believe this is good enough to participate in it, but they think it's great for everybody else.
Representative Rosenthal. Representative Anderson. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm trying to think of the disadvantage of having this be something that districts are required to go out and do. So I'm just wondering on behalf of the testifiers, is it substantial more work to add this bid? I mean, is there more that you have to do if you had, you know, PEEP versus not PEEP? I'm thinking that sort of once you do the bid, there's not much additional work involved in this, but can you just talk about that?
Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to bring Earl back, but I want to talk about a couple of things where this HIDTA has been. We need to separate PEEP and HIDTA. You won't find any disagreement that we should keep PEEP around. I think PEEP is great. And I think if districts want to choose PEEP, more the power to them. If they want to choose to be self-insured or Blue Cross, that's fine. That's not what this bill does. This bill puts a thumb on the scale of one side and tips it. Let me give you a perfect example. The service co-ops in my area went out for a bid, and they received the bids as they were supposed to, but then they were told through a lawyer and through legal counsel, no, you didn't get an actual bid for each school district. So suddenly they had to force them back into the pool. And this is a tremendous amount of work, and I'm going to let my testifier speak to that. All I'm doing with this bill, members, is allowing the process to work through the collective bargaining channels and not tipping the scale one side or the other. I think to get here through the HIDTA process, we needed to make some adjustments, and those were good. I'm now suggesting that we tweak this back to the middle so that it's fair for both sides. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Ottman.
Thank you, Representative Cresha. First of all, before we move on, are there any other questions for Mr. Center or Ms. Messler?
Okay. Can I just get my question answered from them?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, which is just the amount of work necessary, like, to add this as a bid. That was just a question I had for them.
Ms. Messler?
Okay, so thank you. So to answer your question from the teacher's perspective, I want to make sure I answer your question correctly. So it's much easier for us because with HIDTA we have the choice to choose the bargaining unit we want. Currently, when HIDTA changes, that might not be the option. And so for us, it's been much easier because, like I said, the rates have stayed the same. It's kind of a no-brainer. So sign-up has been much, much easier. Does that answer your question?
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was asking about the process of soliciting the bids. Is it is that a disadvantage in some way that it's sort of so much more work? I'm guessing the answer is no, but I just kind of want to get that confirmed.
Ms. Messler or Mr. Center?
I would say in my 15 years of being on the insurance, now that with the electronics and the technology that exists, we spent in our committee this round probably 35 minutes discussing how the RFP would go out in December. We opened our initial bids, which are sequestered at this point, last Thursday. We're opening our final bids this Thursday. It all comes in electronically, and it is printed out, and we open the bids while we're there. So for the committee and putting out the RFPs electronically with all the status, it may be more work for the companies doing the bids. I don't see the work being visited on our administration.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Hoffman, to Representative Pinto's question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The amount of work is... where we used to only have to do go out for bid once every 4 years when we're with a service co-op, and that's where we're with. Obviously, if you're doing it every 2 years, you're going to have much more work, not only for the service cooperative and what they have to do, but also all of the entities that have to provide those bids. And so, yes, there is more work involved. Without a doubt.
Representative Pinto.
Hey, Madam Chair, it sounds like that's more based on the timing, though, as opposed to, you know, if a district is going to be soliciting bids from three private insurers versus three private insurers plus PEEP, I'm guessing the marginal cost of soliciting that fourth bid is probably pretty small. It seems like your point has to do more with the timing of it, if I'm getting that right.
Mr. Altman.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. We're just doing it twice as often,
sure,
automatically causes twice as much work.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when you go out for a bid, and this bill would say that you could lock in for 4 years without a problem, would that mean that you had to have a locked-in amount, or could you commit that you're going to do something for 4 years, and then as we've seen insurance rates go up over time, the insurance company could have this unpredictable rate increase under this bill with no ability to get out?
Mr. Othman?
Madam Chair, Representative
Hillstrom.
Hillstrom. As I understand your question, we don't lock in the rates, okay? What we're saying is we have a 4-year commitment to that particular carrier. If we called for that we wanted to lock in the rates, certainly that would be an option, but not all the time would we do that. What going back to the previous law would do would allow us to go out that year that we say, okay, the first year, not bad, the second year, extraordinary increase, and we're going to say, we're going out for bid now, okay? Or that third year, we're going to go out for bid now. But under current law, we cannot. We have to stay with the current carrier we have for 2 years. That's just the way the law is written. We cannot leave. We have to stay with that carrier.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So since the law passed, have you been seeing rates rising above average or below average of other rate increases? Because all the testimony we've heard from teachers have been that their rates have been lower, their increases have been lower than what they'd seen in the past.
Mr. Othman.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom. When we bid, we have a pooling effect, and so we try to limit any increases and limit any potential decreases so that we can have a more level program. Okay. Certainly, if I have to recall this last round, the district that I represent received a 0% increase. Okay. Certainly, others weren't as lucky. The previous year, I'll enter this, that the district, our district had a 19% increase, and the year before a 16% increase. Now, that's what happens when you have significant claims. Okay. When you're bid, you're based on your previous 18 months claims. We had horrific claims experience, and we're underfunded. So naturally, those increases were warranted. Again, after those horrendous claims were gone, we received a 0% increase because that's what we deserve. Certainly, every carrier is going to look at any district's book of business and rate accordingly. And whether they have an increase or a decrease is not always a bad thing. It's just that's what happens. You can't artificially inflate or deflate someone's claims based on their history. The history is what it is. So they have to rate it accordingly.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's my understanding that 83 districts are in PEEP and that 81 of them are in rural Minnesota. My question is, if this requirement to get the PEEP bid goes forward so that is eliminated as a requirement, who's going to benefit from that? I believe that PEEP has really been a benefit to greater Minnesota schools. Osseo is my school district, so that's one of the testifiers specifically mentioned my school district. That didn't make me horribly happy. But so my question is, who's gonna benefit by us not having this competition of this this bid?
Representative Kreisha?
Sure. Well, first of all, this doesn't expand competition. This limits it. The fact is, it's a requirement. If there are 81 districts in PEEP and they're happy, they'll stay in PEEP. This bill does not force anybody into anything. But if you really truly believe in what this bill is doing, then why aren't we forcing you to get a health partners bid? Why aren't we forcing you to get a Blue Cross bid? Why aren't we forcing you to get a Medica bid? We've singled out one insurance company that's a state, that's the PEEP one, and we've said you must get that bid. That's not competition. That's not how the system works. The other thing that I have to say is, and I understand all of the emotion. I understand because I've gotten the emails and I've been told this is going to take away. This is not taking anything away. All this is simply saying is that we should fall back to the collective bargaining, let the two pools look at the insurance process and choose the very best that they can, and not undercut that process. This undercuts that process. I submit to you, if this is that good of a process, then let's put the self-insured districts in here as well. Let's say to the self-insured districts, you must go out for bids every 2 years, you must look at PEEP, and let's make you do exactly what HIT is doing. They will come in droves and tell you, no, we do not want to be under the requirements of this law, because they know that adds an extra burden to them. So if the argument is this is good for rural Minnesota because we shoved it down your throat, I don't think that's the right way to do it.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Kreisha, so one of the things that has been happening is that by getting this bid, we've been seeing lower prices. So clearly competition is working. Now, maybe you want to have competition only with for-profit companies, as now the law says there can be for-profit group plans here in Minnesota. Maybe that's the path you think that we should take. That doesn't happen to be the path that I think we should take. I think that this bid is a very important bid to continue to get, and I think that I don't always agree with my school board. I have four school districts that I represent, and I don't always agree. And many times we elect people from one of my school boards that doesn't even represent one half of the district, right? They elect all of the people to serve on the board from the wealthier part of the district and not the part that I happen to live on. And so there are many instances where I hear from constituents who say, we don't even have a voice because we don't have wards or precincts or any of those things, elections, right? Everybody's elected from the whole thing. And so they don't always necessarily have a tremendous amount of confidence that their voice is being heard on one half of the district. And what you're doing with this bill is saying to the teachers who want to go through this process and who want to have the opportunity to select to go into PEEP, your voice isn't going to be heard, and only that school board is going to make that decision. And I think that what we've been doing has been working and has been improving the process, and I'm a no on your bill.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I respectfully disagree. I don't think what we're saying here is that we're taking the teacher's voice away. If PEEP is one you want to choose, choose PEEP. I don't care who you choose. I don't care if you use Benny's Insurance Barn down the road. You get to choose. But to say that you have to choose one of them is contrary to saying, open this up.
Are there any further questions?
I have one more. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Seeing none. Mr. Othman. Briefly.
Madam Chair, yes, briefly. The NASBO is not saying we shouldn't have competition at all. We welcome competition, because we believe that competition will lower rates. But to say that one particular entity is always going to be the best all the time, it just can't be true. And I'll give you two examples. Upsala School District and the Monaga School District used to be in PEEP. They determined themselves that PEEP was not the best project for them. And so, yes, by all means, if it's the best bid
and through the bidding process, fine. But if it isn't, and then after the fact, after you've gone through that much effort, then to have it one group say, we're going, that isn't what the bidding process is about. Thank you.
We have two more brief questions. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will be really fast. I just want to clarify my understanding of something with Representative Crescia. So if the district chooses not to get a bid from PEEP, then you talk about the teachers having the option. But if that bid isn't solicited, the teachers wouldn't have that option in any case. And maybe I'm misunderstanding something about how this works. But if you can clarify that with me, I'd appreciate it.
I mean, the collective bargaining unit and the administration can have that conversation. They can solicit a PEEP bid. Nothing takes that away.
Representative Penta.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say if the district agrees, then that becomes something that has to be negotiated.
No, they can ask for it.
Representative Crescia.
They can ask for it. Yeah. Okay.
Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask for a roll call.
For there are any further questions before we proceed? Representative Applebaum has requested a roll call. Representative Crescia, do you renew your motion?
I renew my motion.
Okay, thank you. Representative Crescia renews his motion for House File 1558 to be re-referred to Education Finance. With that, we will take a roll call.
Chair Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative Fenton.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Applebaum.
No.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
No.
Representative Franzen.
Aye.
Representative Halverson. Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Johnson. Representative Crescia.
Aye.
Representative Loon.
Aye.
Representative Loonen.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Rosenthal. No. Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Spudzinski.
Aye.
You're wrong. Mm-hmm.
Seeing 12 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed. So with that, members, we are adjourned.